Here it is.
Gold Dust for MSPs.
Real life case studies and growth tactics from those doing it every day.
Hello there, my friend, and welcome back to the show. Here's what we've got coming up for you today. Avoid these cliches in your MSP's social proof. How to motivate technicians to sell. And my special guest today reveals what ordinary business owners and managers think about AI and the opportunity that creates for you. Welcome to episode 313.
Powered by MSPMarketingEdge.com. Paul Green's MSP Marketing Podcast.
People are so skeptical these days, and when they're looking at your MSP's reviews, if they see certain words and phrases, they might not believe the reviews are true. I know this sounds crazy because it's not like you're selling a product on Amazon and paying for fake reviews, right? But the reality is, not all social proof is equal. You've got to make sure that people say the right things about your MSP. Let's explore how to do that, how to collect social proof that always works, and the best way to guide people on what to say without your reviews ever seeming fake. So, social proof is one of the most powerful tools in your marketing toolkit. People trust what other people say about you more than what you say about yourself. But here's the catch. If your reviews all sound the same, they lose their power. Think about it. How many times have you seen a review that says, great service, or would recommend, or very professional, and that's all it says? I mean, there's nothing wrong with those comments, but when every review looks like that, they stop feeling real. Samey kills sales. It's the same with social proof. Samey kills social proof, because these sound like copy and paste praise, and prospects just kind of ignore them. That's what I mean by cliches in social proof. It's those generic lines that don't give your potential future clients any real reason to trust you. So, what works better? Detailed, story-driven reviews. And I'm going to give you an example. Instead of great IT support, 5 stars, you want something more like, our server went down late on a Friday afternoon. We thought the whole weekend would be lost. But within 30 minutes, the IT team had us back online and they even followed up on Monday morning to make sure everything was stable. That level of care is why we'll never use anyone else. Do you see the difference between those two reviews? The second review tells a story. It shows the problem. It shows what you did to save your client and the end result. And that's what makes it believable and therefore powerful. So how do you actually get this kind of social proof? Well, the trick is to guide your clients. Don't just say to them, please, can you leave us a review? Instead, ask them specific questions. And I'm going to give you a few examples that you can use. Oh, and by the way, if you want to make your life easy and you just want to access the transcript of this podcast or this video, if you're watching it on YouTube, you can find that at MSPMarketingEdge.com. Here are some questions then. Number one, what was going on in your business before you came to us? Number two, what made you decide to reach out to us instead of someone else? Number three, can you tell me about a specific problem that we've solved for you? Number four, how did that make a difference to your business? How did it make a difference to your stress levels? And number five, what's the biggest benefit you've seen since working with us? I'm going to throw in a bonus number six. If a friend asked you why they should work with us, what would you say? Now, those prompts, which you might use in real life if you're videoing them or interviewing them, or you might just send across to them on email and ask them to answer those questions, they give you reviews that are rich in detail and, importantly, in emotion. It's exactly what new prospects want to read. Oh, and one more tip for you. Mix up your formats. Written testimonials are great, but video reviews are even stronger because people can see and hear the genuine emotion. A 30-second video clip of a client saying how you saved their bacon is worth 10 generic 5-star reviews. So avoid the cliches, go deeper, and get your clients to tell their stories. That's the kind of social proof that stands out and convinces prospects that you're the right MSP for them.
Paul Green's MSP Marketing Podcast, still to come.
In a way, compared to the average person, you and I are experts in AI. We're just a little bit ahead of them. I mean, you actually may be a proper AI expert, but just reading about it regularly and keeping up to date with what's being launched and what you can now do with it and looking at the new tools and the new releases, which I do a lot of and I'm sure you do as well, that puts you ahead of the average ordinary business owner or manager who doesn't use it very often. Well, here's something really cool. My special guest today is an actual expert in AI, a proper authority, and he's going to help us understand exactly how ordinary business owners and managers think about it. And he's going to be here in the next few minutes. I know that this is one of the most frustrating things for MSPs. When your technician's talking to a client on the phone, and the answer to all of that client's problems is a specific service that you already sell, but the technician won't even mention it, let alone tell them the details of it and the benefits of it. Why does this happen? Is it that your technicians don't care? Are they scared? Could you incentivize them to sell? Well, maybe. But I believe the actual answer here is to look at things not from your point of view, but to look at things from the client's point of view, and especially from the technician's point of view. Here's how to do that. So here's a question which comes up now and again when I'm talking to MSPs. How do we get our technicians to sell? Because they've got all of the selling opportunities right there in front of them. They're sitting there every day speaking to people on the phone and dealing with tickets. And often they're fixing problems that could be dealt with more proactively if the client bought a higher level of service or a different flavor of an existing solution. Yet, as we know, many technicians just don't want to sell. I know there's always the odd one who's very good at selling and just gets on with it. But how do you motivate the majority who hate selling? How do you motivate them to actually sell? Well, I believe that we're coming at this from the wrong point of view. As the owners of the business, we all want more monthly recurring revenue, right? Because this is the lifeblood of any MSP business. And so that becomes the thing that we're focused on generating when dealing with existing clients. But from the technician's point of view, they're not really interested in helping you to grow your monthly recurring revenue. Many of your staff look at you and the clothes you wear and the car you drive and the house you live in, and they already believe that you're rich enough. I know that sounds crazy, but that might be how some of your staff really do think, because all they see is the rewards. They don't see the years of risk, the hard work, and all of the sleepless nights. They don't see the amount of business-related debt that you carry and the personal guarantees that you might be burdened with. And they don't even see that for every pound or dollar that comes into the business, only a small proportion of that actually reaches your pocket. So you need to stop looking at this from your point of view and instead try to reposition it from one of two other different points of view, the first being your client's point of view. Most technicians, most of the time, want to do a good job for clients. Would you agree? They want to stop them from having problems. They want to fix their issues. And they want their clients to be happy and to say, "Thanks so much for that. You did a great job." Because we are driven as people to seek that kind of feedback. If your technician can recommend something to a client that makes their life easier, then they're much more likely to do this. Especially when they can start to understand that, unlike consumers, business decision makers don't have to make all decisions based on cost alone. So you owe it to your technicians to do some kind of weekly training with them. Perhaps just getting them together as a group for Pizza Tuesdays to teach them about a specific service that you're offering and what symptoms to look out for. In fact, if you did this every single Tuesday for the next year, that alone would help your technicians to sell more, because they'll learn how to spot more symptoms of more problems, and they'll learn how to understand that there is a solution ready for those problems. The other way to position it is from the tech's point of view, to answer the question of what's in this for me? Whether we like it or not, some people do operate in a selfish manner. It may not seem that way on the outside, but in the inside, they're asking themselves at some kind of level, what's in this for me? Why should I do that for you? So perhaps the right thing to do is to offer your technicians a little slice of the pie if they can contribute to the business in a way that helps the clients. The client gets help, the business gets extra revenue, and they get a top up to their Xbox fund. Everyone wins. So you can put in place a very simple scheme, such as they get 10% of anything that they sell. If it's a one-off project, they get 10% of the revenue. If it's a monthly recurring revenue thing, then they get 10% of the first year's value. And of course, they only get this cash when you've received the cash, so there's no risk to you. Perhaps the most robust way to do this is a combination of the two. Weekly awareness training for your technicians with a simple reward scheme for those that feel comfortable advising the clients. And in fact, they don't even have to do the selling, do they? They could just tell the clients about it and then just send you an email saying, "Hey, we've just told XYZ client about this. Could you please give them a call and see if it's something they want to do?" So you do the actual closing, but they've done all the hard work of educating and persuading the client. Tell me, do you think this is something that would work for your technicians?
Paul Green's MSP Marketing Podcast. Still to come.
You put in all of this effort to try and generate leads for your MSP, but what if interested parties can't actually get hold of you when they try to inquire? What if they're calling and no one's answering? Or what if they're filling in forms on your website and no one's ever seeing the inquiry come through? We've got a Marketing Minute coming up with a piece of advice from an industry expert to make sure you never miss a single lead for your MSP. And that's coming up in the next few minutes. Do you know that compared to the average business owner or manager, you and I are somewhat experts in AI? Even just being aware of what's happening week to week makes us ahead of the curve compared to them. In fact, you'll know that there's a huge opportunity right now for MSPs to advise their clients in a consultative capacity about how to roll out AI in the best way within their business. And right now, I've got a secret weapon for you. My special guest today is an expert in AI, a true authority, and he's going to tell you how ordinary business owners and managers feel about it. The more you understand, the easier you'll find it to sell them your AI consulting services.
My name is John Bambanek. I'm a cybersecurity professional with my own firm and author of Lies, Damn Lies, and AI, kind of based on my PhD work at the University of Illinois.
And that's such a great title of a book. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, John. We're going to talk about AI attitudes of ordinary business owners and managers. So the people that MSPs want to reach, are they using AI as much as we're using AI? Is AI really a big thing for ordinary businesses out there? Or is it just something that in the channel, because we're talking about Copilot and ChatGPT and Perplexity and Claude every single day, is it a bigger thing for us than it is for them? That's what I hope that you're going to be able to answer for us, John. But first of all, just tell us a little bit about your work as a cybersecurity expert. So what do you actually do and what kind of research have you done on AI?
So for 26 some odd years, right, as just threat researchers, how criminals abuse technology, right, and how they go about doing the work of extracting dollars from our wallets, whether it's personal wallets or business wallets. I mean, I tend to focus on financial fraud. And every time there's a new evolution of technology, right, there's new ways that people steal money, right? You know, a few years ago, we were talking about cryptocurrency. There's a whole class of frauds and malicious activity that was enabled by that on top of the benefits of decentralized currency, right? Everything comes with its costs and benefits, and human beings being what human beings are, there's always a subset of people that's finding new and innovative ways to extract people from their money.
Yes, of course. And as we know, MSPs are there to help build up that cushion between those criminals and their end targets. By the by, I'm reading a book at the moment, which I can almost guarantee you've read. It's called This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends by Nicole.
Yes, by Nicole Tolroff, I think, yes.
That's it, yeah. So what a terrifying book. I think every MSP should read it. It's a very long read. It's taken me quite a few weeks to get through it, but it's essentially about state-sponsored cyber hacking. It's a terrifying book, and I'm sure you've hoovered that and many of them up. What was the other one I read a few years ago by Kevin Mitnick? It was his book of how he got started hacking back in the 70s, which is a really entertaining read, especially when he became a pen tester. I'll go and look that up after the interview, but great book. So let's talk about ordinary people then. So ordinary business owners and managers who are out there running dentists, veterinarians, they're running manufacturing plants, they're CPAs, they're lawyers. To them, is AI as big for them as it is for us? Because obviously they must have heard about ChatGPT and they must have heard about everything because it's been like 3-4 years since it exploded. But is it as big to them as it is to us?
I think it's kind of a mixed bag and really it's kind of polarized. Now that you asked that question, you've got some who are well deep in it and think it's going to revolutionize everything. You've got others who are thinking the Matrix and the Terminator will become reality, right? The truth is somewhere in the middle, right? But you know, we're kind of in a societal time where people are really passionate and energetic, either to the positive or the negative. So I think for like lawyers, for example, right? There's a couple of lawyers who went off to the races and, you know what, I'm going to automate the tedium of writing pleadings and gotten in trouble because they cited cases that didn't exist. But as a class, other lawyers, by nature, lawyers are who you get when things get wrong. So they're risk averse by nature. There are many that are like, I'm not going to touch this stuff ever because it's too risky. But it's kind of there's no one in the middle. It's either you're really hot or you're really cold about AI. There's very few people who kind of like, hey, you know, might work well here, might not work well there. There's not a lot of balance.
Yeah. And do you know what? I see that with MSPs as well. For every MSP I meet who's so into AI that they're vibe coding their own PSA. You know, I've met people that have done that, which just explodes my mind, because you couldn't have done that 2 years ago. But I also meet those who hate the fact, for example, that Microsoft is baking Copilot into everything, right down to, as you and I know, it's on the keyboard on the Copilot Plus PCs. It's, you know, just before the interview, you and I were chatting, and we were saying it's in PowerPoint. It's in, you know, it's appearing within applications. I mean, for those business owners who are perhaps on that I don't like AI side, do you think the fact that it's being forced into the tools they use every day, do you think that's going to change their attitudes, or do you think that's just going to make them cross their arms and almost push it away a little bit harder?
Well, I think it depends. I mean, AI right now is in search for business models, really, is what it comes down to. And part of the baking it into everything is to see how people use it. I mean, it's a pervasive sucking up data, because AI needs to be constantly fed. And it needs to be constantly fed more. So, I mean, there's kind of a symbiosis there in the sense of, you know, Microsoft wants Copilot on everything because they need all the data to make their models better. But, you know, I think like MSPs, right? Microsoft, Google, all the companies, right? They like taking it 99% of the way there. The final mile is for various service providers. And that's what you're seeing with the explosion of AI firms out there, where there are wrappers around ChatGPT or Claude or what have you to create services like Canva or Motion or whatever, to go figure out what the business models are that really will sell and be the next big thing to make people's lives better. So I think, you know, for the innovative MSPs out there, you know, it's a green field. If you can come up with an idea that you think you can sell to your customers, you can make a lot of money. But the people who are like, you know, hey, no, you know, we're not going to do this. There's a handful of CEOs and small business owners out there who will want to say, how do I get this stuff out of my organization and keep my data processes, company safe from it?
Yeah, well, I guess actually, if you look at that, there's money to be made keeping AI out of a business, isn't there? There's money to be made in blocking access to AI tools, and I don't know if you can actually physically extract it out of the sort of the 365 ecosystem. Probably not.
The problem with totally disabling, you know, AI is that essentially you're dealing with monopoly companies who are telling you what you can and can't do. I'm sure there's a way to do it, but I haven't. The one is, don't buy a Copilot-enabled laptop or PC. I mean, I'm talking to you on a MacBook, but, you know, I'm sure Apple has their own AI place as well. And there's plenty of AI in phones now. So I'm not entirely sure that there's much of a market to be a curmudgeon, but you can still buy dumb phones out there for people who really don't want a smartphone.
Yes.
You know, it's a little bit harder to get.
Yeah. Those old Nokia phones are selling pretty well, I hear. If you were an MSP, John, so if you run a managed service provider and you were looking at AI as it stands, and as we know, we're on minute one of hour one of day one, and as you say, it's a green field, and there's just opportunity because we haven't yet really settled into exactly what the AI business models will be. What would you do right now to make money from AI? So would you sell AI consulting because you know more than the people that you're consulting with? Would you offer to build applications? What would you do?
Well, I don't know that I would offer applications, right? It's like my personal expertise is cybersecurity, so I focus around cybersecurity use cases. If you're just saying, hey, I'm going to do AI to do something I really don't know, that's where things probably will fail over the long term, because just in life and in business, there are no shortcuts. You know, on a long enough time scale, I'm going to beat an uneducated person on cybersecurity, even if they're enabled by AI, because these tools will fail, and I'm smart enough to be able to figure out when they fail. So I think it's a question of like, if you're an MSP, is do what you know and do what your customers need and solve problems, right? All business is about solving problems, right? And I mentioned tedium, right, is one use case. Is, you know, ChatGPT or all these tools are great for automating away tedium, right? Managing your calendar. I just don't know that you're going to make a billion-dollar company for managing your calendar. But, you know, outsourcing, that's where I got to figure out, well, do I meet with this person at 9 or 2 p.m. and managing? I mean, I have customers all over the world. Just managing meetings and time zones is a pain in the hind, right? You know, so I certainly think there's plenty of automating tedium that can be done. But I mean, MSPs are there to solve a business. Is, hey, a dentist wants to be a dentist. They don't want to maintain Office 365. If you could solve that problem for them at a price point they're willing to pay for, great. If it's a dentist who wants to say, how can I make better crowns using artificial intelligence? I don't know enough about dentistry to speak to that, you know, and you know enough about that, maybe you can, you know, create something that somebody will buy. But yeah, with technology, technology is so painful, and like the last mile is left to the end user, whether it's a business owner or a consumer. I think there's always money to be made helping make technology less painful.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. And ironically, my partner is a dental nurse, and we were talking about change in business. She's been doing it a long time, 20 odd years. And she was saying in her business, what's changed is the technology's got smaller, but it's still the same. The drills are the same. You know, they've got a bit smaller and a bit more powerful and cheaper, but they're the same. And when I described to her the amount of change, I mean, just take something like cybersecurity. Even in the 9 years I've been in the channel, cybersecurity is unrecognizable today to what it was in 2016, obviously. And you know, that pace of change, I think ordinary business owners don't realize how much change and the pace of change in the channel, not just cybersecurity, but now AI, and who knows what the next thing will be. Let me come on to my final question, John, which is, I want you to look into the future. It's the crystal ball question. And I always ask this of any AI expert I get onto YouTube or onto the podcast, just because your entire life is working around AI and looking at it. And I guess you're reading the research papers, and actually to have someone that has a cybersecurity view of AI is especially important. Where do you think this is going? You know, and cast your eye years ahead into the future. I guess we can all see that the cyber criminals are going to use AI more and more and more because it's making their lives easier. But where do you think all of this is going in the next few years?
Well, I would say every evolution of technology, back to the printing press, I mean, it's all had benefits, you know, but we've been stealing and killing from each other since our earliest documented histories. You know, it allows people to commit crime over larger distance at greater scale with less accountability. You know, artificial intelligence, you know, won't be any different, right? Is accountability and transparency are real big problems in AI. And often some of the first biggest use cases of new technology are by criminals, right? And I'll give an example relevant to small, medium business of authorizing transactions, right? A business owner will call into the office. I need to wire $50,000, $500, whatever an appropriate dollar amount is, right? I can now impersonate, you know, a voice, video persona with credibility to sound like anybody else and, you know, assume an identity to cause transactions to occur. And the one that happens, or the one that occurs, I think of, is it was in Hong Kong. It's a $25 million U.S. transaction because somebody impersonated not just the CFO of the organization, but a couple of other people in a Zoom call, because we're all used to video messaging now. And, you know, kind of a core security thing is authenticating is somebody who they say they are. And that's been an unsolved problem. And it keeps getting worse because we keep putting more technology and abstracting away. Because, you know, I wouldn't want to flash my driver's license, you know, on this podcast. Yeah. You wouldn't either, right? You know, because it slows things down. We want things to happen faster, but they also are a little bit riskier, certainly in the short term. Eventually, we'll solve those problems, but it usually takes us a good 10 years from a cybersecurity standpoint to go figure out where the problems are and at least be able to create products and services that people have to pay for. And the smaller you are, or the thinner the margins you are, the less able you are to protect yourself.
Yes, and of course. And in the 10 years we're solving that problem, those criminals have come up with new problems. It's a never-ending cycle, unfortunately. Thank you so much for coming onto this podcast, John. Just briefly tell us about your book. And for anyone that wants to talk to you, how can they get in touch with you?
Sure. You know, kind of the inspiration for the title is a book from 50 years ago, AI, Lies, Damn Lies, and Statistics, right? And AI is basically statistics at its core. And, you know, people do lie and deceive with data and convincingly. So there's a notion of AI being this great, hyper-intelligent, always right thing, free of bias, which isn't true because humanity is all throughout the AI process. So it's kind of a, I mean, it's not an entirely critical look because there are great things that AI can do. There are great use cases for it. It's been very successful in healthcare, but kind of a more sober-minded assessment of where it can go well, where it goes wrong, what problems are still out there. For people who want to reach me, my firm is bambinetconsulting.com. You can find the book on Amazon. There's a landing page, I think, liesdamnliesandai.com as well.
Paul Green's MSP Marketing Podcast, The Marketing Minute.
Hi, everyone. This is Dave Sutton of Wingman MSP Marketing, and I've got a quick tip that you can implement, well, two tips potentially that you could implement in around 60 seconds or less. First one kind of sounds like a no-brainer. From first-hand experience, we've seen recently that many an MSP can fall foul of this, is to answer the damn phone. We've seen so many MSPs miss inbound sales leads that we've called them directly ourselves to have conversations with them or on behalf of vendor partners. And you go through the sales line and it either doesn't get answered or it just rings out or it goes to a voicemail or it goes through to a tech that can't actually ask the right questions and be able to steer the prospect. So I fear many of you are missing out on opportunities by just not considering what the hell happens when you get an inbound sales call. My second tip, we're seeing email security is running rampant in tightening up on spoofing and all these ransomware attacks and things like that that are coming through via malicious mail. But one of the victims of that is the submissions from your website contact forms. So just go and test your contact form to make sure that you've got the SMTP configured correctly, that you can actually receive the submissions that people are filing through your website contact forms. We'd hate to see all this hard work go into generating new leads that MSPs desperately need, and you fail at the hurdles of being able to answer the phone and handle an inbound inquiry, or even receive the contact form submission through your website. Best of luck.
Coming up next week.
I really enjoyed this week's show and I hope that you did too. Next week, we're going to be talking about retention and specifically the danger of assuming that your clients are loyal. Even though MSPs have insane retention, I believe you must have a proactive approach to keeping clients and making sure they're happy. Oh, and of course, selling them more monthly recurring revenue services. It's all coming up next week, so I'll see you then.
For MSPs around the world, the MSP Marketing Podcast with Paul Green.